Oh, welcome into a daily editorial here on the KE Report. Happy to report that I am chatting with John Kaiser. It's been a little while since I had John back on the show, but John, to have you back on now, we can talk a little bit about just how boring and essentially crappy the gold market is, especially when it comes to exploration stocks. There are still a handful of stocks that are discovery stories that are getting some market attention, but there's even more stocks that seem to get a whiff of something, run up a little bit, and then sell back off, or even those that don't run up and just maintain this sideways to even sideways to down trading region. But one thing that a lot of bullish commentators, or at least people that want to be bullish on the metal sector, say is that, you know what, all we need is one great discovery, or even better, one area play to draw investors back in and get some more excitement in this sector. Let's talk about area plays, though, and from a high-level look, in your eyes, what does make a great area play? Is it simply just one massive discovery?
Well, Corey, area plays are dear to my heart because it was the Hemlo discovery, 20 million ounces in 1982, which drew me into this sector, and which I've never left in the past 35 years. An area play is different from a simple discovery play. In a discovery play, some junior has some project somewhere where they've got a gold target and they do all the work and they say, well, we know there's supposed to be something here. And when you find it, the stock goes way up, everybody's happy. But it really doesn't have any implications for the general area because everybody knows, well, yeah, this was where, if there was going to be one, it was going to be here. An area play is different because the discovery emerges as a surprise. It was not something anybody was expecting. Hemlo was this nothingness thing that had been looked at by others in the past, and they weren't really expecting to find this 20 million ounce deposit, which was of a different style than what Ontario was known for, which was more these sort of structurally controlled vein shear hosted gold systems in these greenstone belts. So a key thing is it's in an area where there's open land to be acquired. It is not quite clear what is the relevant geology for hosting this discovery. And the discovery ends up being made almost by accident and blows everybody away with its scale.
So, John, when we talk about different area plays, you're right. They do usually come as a surprise, and it leads to a lot of staking around wherever the discovery is, a lot of money being raised around that discovery, and a lot of exploration work happening, which, again, can draw in some interest, especially if that discovery just grows and the companies around it also benefit. But let's talk about some areas where we have seen some major discoveries or some area plays, and we really need to isolate this in terms of countries and even further drive down within some countries. We've seen Canada become a fairly large driver in terms of area plays. Can you recap maybe some of the past area plays that have drawn attention?
Well, I've already mentioned Hemlo, and that lasted from 1982 until early 84, and nothing beyond Hemlo itself was ever found in the general area. But it became the stimulus for raising a lot of money. At that time, it was flow-through money, and Bruce McDonald put together a whole group of companies. They all started with the name, with the word Golden. And they went into other areas, sort of greenstone belts that had not been well explored in Ontario and Quebec. And they did regional boring grassroots exploration. And in late 1985, the Casa Berardi discovery came out of nowhere, the Estrades play. And all of a sudden, a really bearish market. We were in a bad funk by late 85 in the resource juniors. These stocks went absolutely nuts. We had record volume, and all of a sudden this process was vindicated, and anybody who was in that area, oh, we just need to throw more money at it. And it was that like uncertainty, oh, how much more dollars are needed to find something similar? I guess we were on the right track, and then, of course, they staked more of it, and that play, it didn't last super long, but it really put the whole idea of a great Canadian area play on the map. And then the next big one that came into the Canadian system, that was Eskay Creek in the Golden Triangle. And Eskay Creek was a deposit that would be worth several billion dollars if it were found today. A VMS deposit, very, very high grade gold and silver overprint. And the Golden Triangle is a geologically complex and rich area. There's porphyry systems there. There's a shear vein-controlled gold systems. There's VMS systems in it. It's just one of those fantastically fertile parts. And that entire area ended up being staked with Murray Pesum driving it. And lots of exploration got done. The glass went half full. Eskay Creek was something that hadn't been seen in this area again. Nothing like it was found. There was one that was similar, which a junior today called Eskay Mining Corp is still trying to find something on the property to the south, where they had something that was a fragment, but they never found the iceberg that this little tip was connected to. But lots of other things ended up being found, and the Golden Triangle, every year people hope that something will happen again. But what's missing now is this idea of something brand new and unexpected. And then the next one was the diamond discovery that came onto the scene in 1992. Diamet made that in the Arctic. And the Arctic, the Slave Craton, boy, except for some greenstone-hosted gold systems, that was a big tundra of nothingness up there. And the whole area ended up staked wall to wall, because even though Chuck Fickbey claimed that he got it all, there was no way they had done enough exploration to be sure. And besides, De Beers, which understood that this area should have diamond pipes, had sampled through the entire area in prior decades and managed to find nothing. And yet here was this Ekati cluster right smack in the middle where it should have been. So that became a huge area play. And then there was Voisey's Bay, which happened a couple years later in Labrador, when Robert Friedland's Diamond Fields found the nickel copper deposit. And again, that area had been explored by majors. They had found nothing in prior decades. And all of a sudden, here was something of astonishing size and value. So the whole area ended up being staked, and the glass was half full for all the juniors. But that was the beginning of the map staking era, where the group that has the initial discovery looks at the relevant geology, all the government maps, goes online, and in this case, they staked all the Tasiuak gneisses that were the host for the Voisey's Bay ovoid system. And so when all the others came in, they all just staked these anorthosites and hoped there was something else in there. And sure enough, nobody else ever found anything like it. And Voisey's Bay was really the last great Canadian area play that we had in Canada.
So, John, let's just actually circle back to the Golden Triangle, because there is still a lot of work being done in the Golden Triangle, a lot of money being spent, and a lot of companies exploring up there. And, well, I've even talked many times to Skeena Resources that holds the Eskay Creek project and old mine. Is there a chance that area play that has already had a pretty significant mine there, has other projects that are going into production, is there a chance, can it even be a surprise again? Or now is this simply so much money's been spent, and quite frankly, there has been some discoveries, but not huge ones, or not enough to garner that excitement that first came in?
Well, there's always the possibility of finding another high-grade snip deposit. There's, of course, the Brucejack system, King Valley of the King system of Pretium. And the problem with the Golden Triangle is really good stuff has already been found. In fact, Newcrest just paid $800 million to buy 70% or some percentage of the Red Chris deposit, where the open pit's going to be depleted fairly soon, but they basically bailed out Imperial Metals and are now going to go in there and underground the block cave, the much richer D deeper part of that system. And G.T. Gold's discovery, that has attracted a lot of attention. But the view with the Golden Triangle is you can't surprise me with something off the scale and unexpected. So the discovery plays will tend to be individual companies that go up. For example, if SSR, when it spent that $8 million in the last couple of years on SK Mining's Siblulu project, had managed to find another SK Creek 2 deposit, that would simply have made that stock go up because they own that on-strike geology. And yeah, it turns out there was more than just one such deposit. And maybe Garibaldi and these other ones around there might have gone up in sympathy. But you would not have had this, interest in everything else to find something similar. So the Golden Triangle is a great place for a company to surprise you with a brand new discovery. But such discovery is not going to have the infectiousness that finding something brand new and unexpected in a region has, and which is key to igniting an area play where everybody is a potential winner until proven otherwise.
That's a very good point, because one other consideration too is there's already been so much money up there and there's already so much land staked and owned by these companies that really when an area play gets going and gets that enthusiasm, it's because new companies are entering the area, staking new ground and potentially exploring on this virgin ground, which really can provide some short-term boost to very depressed or even new companies and share prices. Let's also look in the U.S., though. The U.S. isn't really a country that we can just lump into one. You really need to go state to state, and you can think about Nevada. That's been explored, but you even mentioned to me off mic that there's this coal concept of maybe northern Nevada's perking up, but again, is that even new enough to spark a whole area play?
Well, I think Nevada could become the focus of a modern-day gold rush. Since the late 60s, they've found over 300 million ounces in these Carlin-type gold deposits. You know, these are micron, invisible gold. You don't see it in outcrop. It was something that the old-timers would not have found, and most of it is deep. It's not outcropping in the first place, as it is with the epithermal systems in the Walker Lane, where you get the high-grade gold and silver. Now, these deposits are mainly controlled by Barrick and Newmont. And what's happened in this year with Barrick and Newmont agreeing to pool all their assets into a single entity that's going to be churning out 4.1 million ounces a year of high-grade, extremely profitable gold, possibly even spinning out that entity as a standalone so that there is an American gold champion, that's going to put a lot of eyeballs on northern Nevada, where these Carlin-type gold deposits are located. But the thing with Barrick Newmont, they have so much mine site exploration potential where they can just keep going deeper and a long strike of their existing systems. And they have very big land positions that would sort of rule out Nevada becoming an area play candidate. And if somebody were to maybe find something, it would simply be a matter of luck and that company would go up and end the story. But I've been fascinated by Nevada for the past decade because of that Junior Nevada Exploration Inc., which developed that hydrogeochemistry technique for sampling the groundwater that's in the basins. And half of northern Nevada is covered by basin gravels going down, sometimes 5,000 meters or more, hopelessly deep. But on the edges, these Carlin-type gold deposits are potentially present. But it is hopelessly expensive to explore for them if there's no signposts in the ranges that poke up. But this company has been doing almost the equivalent of till sampling in the Arctic for diamond indicator minerals. They've been sampling these basins. And they've done this for 15 years, and they haven't had a whole lot of luck, and they haven't had much support from the industry. But they've made that South Grass Valley discovery, which is a lower plate, hydrothermally pumped window that's only under 150, 200 meters of gravel cover. They haven't yet found the gold, but it's got the Carlin Pathfinder signature. If they were to find a serious Carlin-type gold deposit in that particular location, which is away from the so-called main trends that host Twin Creeks, the Carlin and the Cortez Pipeline Gold Rush systems. That would do two things. One, all of this northern Nevada area is prospective, and John Muntean's theory about the subduction slab rollback, it's already accepted by the big guys like Barrick. It starts gaining credibility with explorers, and then NGE has the methodology for relatively cheaply looking through this cover and coming into the general ballpark of a blind system. So if this were to happen, you would end up seeing Nevada staked. All the flanks of all these basins would be staked because it would tell us, because the market would say, wow, these juniors, if they put the money to it and use this method, they could be sitting on a 5, 10 million, who knows how big, high-grade gold deposit. But until that happens, it's only a possibility. But it would really become a magnet for American speculators, because to find another 300-400 million ounces in northern Nevada, that is a very tempting prize. And it's still old-fashioned post-staking, physical staking, and it is expensive in Nevada. So you will not have your little amateur clown companies going into Nevada these days. You would see sophisticated groups go in there, blanket stake these basin flanks, and then go raise the money, and the glass would be half full for the juniors in Nevada. Nevada is really the best place for a great American area play.
All right, John, let's step outside of the U.S. then. And I just want a quick comment from you regarding what's going on in Australia, in that Pilbara area, all thanks to Novo. There are still a lot of companies that hold this land. Novo holds a lot of this land. Does this have a chance of becoming an area play?
In 2017, I became very, very excited when I understood what Novo appeared to have found in the Comet Well Purdy's Reward area. Here was a Witwatersrand type system where you're talking about a potential endowment of a billion ounces in the form of this nugget type gold hosted in the conglomerates. What was interesting is, you know, everybody knew Pilbara had potential for this. There had been lots of drilling and had been mainly focused on the hardy sandstone, but nothing really interesting had been found. Beaton's Creek was about the Nullagine area, Marble Bar area. They'd found these conglomerate hosted things, but they didn't have any sort of size and grade comparable to what we have in South Africa's Witwatersrand reefs. But this was between the basement and the Mount Robe basalt, an area that would have been deepest within the basin itself and which nobody really tested. And here it was outcropping, and these fossickers, these people with metal detectors were finding these strange-shaped flat nuggets on the edge where it was exposed. And given the theory of how this stuff formed, sort of a giant regional event related to the emergence of oxygen-generating algae in the waters, precipitating out this stuff. This was a fascinating story because it meant this stuff could be everywhere. But that play has basically ground to a halt because the measurement problem has not been solved. These nuggets are too large and too dispersed to assess using core drilling, bulk sampling. They've tried it with up to sort of 5, 6, 7 tons, but found even that is inadequate. They now need to go what's called trial mining, bulk sampling, 10,000 ton things. And now they have this problem that in Australia, to get a permit to do that, you need to have a resource estimate. So they're stuck in this catch 22. Well, we can't have a resource estimate until we bulk sample on this scale. Yeah. So how do we prove that this stuff does exist at an average grade worth mining, and that there is this enormous hundreds of millions of ounces of nugget gold to be harvested? So the play has basically died because it's at this stalemate. It could end up being revived down the road if Novo manages to solve this problem. And again, although you can find maybe high grade in a particular area, we still need to demonstration that over large areas, high enough grade to be worth mining is present. and that there's some way of figuring out, yes, here is this area, here is where we can start. So the hope that I had that this could infect the entire junior resource sector globally, it basically fizzled last year when it became apparent that they just can't get it to that level of validation. And validation of the world-class economic nature of discovery, that is a critical part for a, you know, great Canadian-style area play.
It's difficult, too. It takes a lot of money. And, well, as you just mentioned with what's going on with Novo in that area, it's just a tough resource or a tough type of geology to deal with. But you know what? They do have money and they're working towards that. John, let's also talk about some other countries, though. We've heard a lot of news, especially in the last about 2 years, about Ecuador opening up more to mining. But of course, nothing's ever a smooth process down in South America. There's also some more interest in Peru, but again, not a smooth process as it does take a while to get permitted. Any countries you're looking at closely?
Well, Ecuador is interesting because when the Fruta del Norte discovery, you know, 14 million ounces of high-grade gold was made by Orelli, and I mean, the stock went from 60, 70 cents to $40 pre-split equivalent within like 3 to 6 months. That actually prevented a great Canadian or style area play because it happened so fast. The public did not get on board. The company had blown through $19 million and really not found anything to write home about. Was spending the last million on a hypothesis, which was an interesting geological theory, and they ended up getting lucky and hitting this fantastic intersection, which turned out not to be some down structure intersection where the step outs, you know, come up with nothing. But then the government under Rafael Correa became kind of insane, nationalistic, introduced all these rules and windfall taxes and moratoriums, and Ecuador kind of just died on the vine. And it became more a country type play. And Indonesia with BRIEX, when people thought it was real, it was also like that. In these sort of foreign countries, where concessions are, there's a complex procedure for getting concessions and licenses and exploration permits. It takes a long time to get them. You do not get this sort of rapid staking all surrounding the original discovery. But the discovery puts the country on the map. And Ecuador, you know, it had some stuff, but it did not have anything on the scale of Fruta del Norte. And these things have now changed. There's a new government in place. They've revised their mining law. They're opening up. Lundin Gold has took over the Fruta del Norte deposit from Kinross, which paid $1 billion to acquire it. They are developing it. There's a lot of potential there. And I think Ecuador is one of those Latin American frontiers which has not had the degree of exploration that Peru and Chile and Argentina have had. In Peru, in Chile especially, that's had a lot of, you know, rock knockers swarm the country. There you're looking now more for blind systems that aren't so obvious. Ecuador still hasn't had that degree of surface exploration which rules out the likelihood of finding something sticking out of the ground. But it requires talented geologists using whatever data they have, geological data, collecting their own data and homing in on prospective geology and getting license for it and again doing standalone type stories. So it's the idea of Ecuador that's interesting, but not the adjacent potential that you get in a classic area play.
All right, John, let's circle back to Canada where we started this discussion, because you recently wrote something about an area play that you're watching very closely. This is the James Bay area. Break down some of what's attracting you to right here now.
Well, I first heard of James Bay in 2004 when Virginia Gold, which was a prospect generator, farm out model following company, focused on central Quebec, basically a very underexplored region. They discovered the Eleanor showing Andre Gaumont, who was supposed to be farming everything out and have some other dummy, spend all the money to earn, majority interest in the project, said, "This is a keeper. I'm not going to farm this out." And they ended up drilling it, and lo and behold, it was a new style of deposit for this area, sort of meta-sediment hosted. The stock ended up being bought out at $14 in a sort of $750 million transaction. Goldcorp bought it. Goldcorp developed it. At the end of the day, if Goldcorp knew everything about it, they might not have done anything with it. But it opened up the region. Eleanor now is a major mine. Other product, there was a little area play around it. Not too much was found. More recently, Sirius with its Chichu project, and then Azimuth, East Main, and Goldcorp with their Eleanor South project, which is the southern half of Chichu. Now they're looking at a tonalite and intrusion hosted gold system. But the place became kind of like so-so, not interesting. Lithium companies went in there in the past few years, picked up claims covering known pegmatite showings. There's a couple plays like Nemaska and Galaxy's lithium project, which are very, very advanced. But something happened last year, which has made me very optimistic about the James Bay actually becoming a giant, great Canadian area play. And the serendipity involved with all these things happening, that's a classic characteristic of an area play, because it's all these accidents which end up leading to a major, major discovery. And in this case, it started with a government survey done in 2011, where the geological survey people went out there, collected these lake bottom sediments on these large sort of 12 square kilometer grid. Also put boots on the ground to map every square kilometer. And one of them ended up collecting from outcrop an interesting looking sample, which ran 2% copper equivalent. And that was in the database. It was published in 2011. Not much happened. But last year, Midland Exploration, which is a prospect generator focused on Quebec, Gino Roger sent his crew out there to check out this showing. And sure enough, they found the showing, and they had all their junior geologists with their beep mats strapped to them, and they have to drag these things around the bushes. They absolutely hate it, because these things always get snagged on stuff, and you get yanked back like some poor horse being pulled. But when this map goes over ground where there's conductivity, in other words, sulfides, it starts to beep. So they go there, dig it up, peel the moss off. And what they found was a field of copper-rich boulders with gold, silver, and moly credits stretching over a couple kilometers in this general area. And they also found outcrop, and the grades ran as high as 16%. And they said, wow, this is interesting. And ironically, several years earlier, another group, and I won't mention the name because it's such an embarrassment, had visited this showing, found the showing, but managed to not find any of these other boulders, and walked away and said, it's just some random little copper thing that doesn't amount to anything. Anyways, Midland ended up staking what it could. It turned out that the land to the west was already owned by Azimuth and Soquem, which had used the same database to chase down the gold potential linked to a bismuth anomaly in the lake bottom sediments. They staked everything to the east. And now what they've got a drill program. They've done about 10 holes. They did an IP survey over this. It's a 4-kilometer strike that they're drilling. The IP survey says, well, there are sulfides there. They have a very tight lid on this. The footprint is several hundred million tons, but in this area, you need 1.5% or better copper to develop it, because it is remote. So right now we've got all these other pieces, and I haven't even mentioned all the other interesting aspects that say this can become a great Canadian area play. but it's still missing the validation that we never got with the Pilbara. But by early May, we should start getting the assays. And because these boulders go from, you know, whatever, 0.25% copper all the way to 16%, it means it's all over the map in terms of grade. So what, even if you're looking at the core, you'll see great stuff here, but then maybe the next meter is not. It's all going to be about how it averages. Are we going to have, you know, 50 to 100 meter intervals of 1.5% copper, or is it going to average out, you know, 0.25% copper, such as the ITEC deposit in Sweden, half billion ton copper gold system that Boliden is mining, which is not going to be any good in this area. But what's interesting is BHP has taken down $5.8 million in private placement at a 36% premium to the market at $1.70. And with the right that if there's any more financings done, they can take it all up to them owning 19.99% of the company. And BHP is one of the world's biggest mining companies and is only interested in world-class copper plays. And so you ask, well, what are they doing here with this thing? Well, they like the grade range. They like the fact that Quebec has got this Plan Nord program to facilitate infrastructure development in this region, to open it up to mine development. But most of all, most importantly, they don't know what this is. I mean, they've got an incredible internal catalog of copper deposit styles, and they're looking at this, and it's supposedly 2.5 billion years old, and they're not quite sure what it is. And the interesting thing about this, and this is again part of the serendipity stuff, when they looked at these rocks, they found chalcopyrite, which is the copper sulfide, but there seems to be very little, if any, pyrite or pyrrhotite present, which is the iron sulfide, and which of course is also very conductive. And that is why this has not been found, because when there's iron sulfides associated with this type of hydrothermal system and it's exposed at surface, it rusts, it oxidizes. And you fly over, you see that sort of yellowish-reddish-ness from the rust, and you say, ah, sulfide's down. And every geologist will go there, put boots on the ground, get some samples, and they would have like found this ages ago. So this thing is a different beast. It appears to have extraordinary scale. If the grades are up there, who knows where else in this James Bay region this exists? And the BHP guy said, well, hell, you know, $6 million buck investment gets us a toehold smack in the middle of this. Let's go do this. We don't yet have the validation, but another part of this great Canadian area play, it turns out that Azimut and Soquem probably have the equivalent of whatever it is that Midland has on the Mithril project, and quite by accident. And on Monday, they published a graphic of their own lake bottom sediment sampling program that they did in 2016, which shows a very substantial copper anomaly in that area, which is not visible in the government survey data because the data points are a tenth of the detail that Azimut and Soquem did. And you're looking at this and saying, wow, they've got probably 7 kilometers tracking the same linear trend as Midland has. So if the results show that this has the grade to be world class, then Azimut is in the game and probably has something similar. So there's your on-trend projection that's part of the area play thing. And then, of course, Midland's gone and staked what it thinks is the relevant geology. And there's another little junior, which I'm not going to mention because I'm still sort of telling my subscribers about it, which has a chunk of land that it owns for lithium potential, which is smack in the middle of the trend that Midland has staked. And so here's some 5-cent junior that everybody has given up on, all of a sudden, possibly in the right place for all the wrong reasons, which is another classic criteria of a great Canadian area play where you find some apparent lost cause, suddenly is in the middle of something very big. And there'll be other juniors in the James Bay area. The smarter ones are out there now trying to figure out the relevant geology and selectively staking that. But if we get validation, all of the James Bay area will be staked wall to wall, and it's all online map staking. Because when that glass goes half full, and it's in this context of something very new, whose geological, you know, deposition model is not understood, where what it is that you're supposed to be looking is something brand new, well, then everybody is a potential winner until proven otherwise. And so you get enormous money flowing in. Everybody does exploration. And in the case of James Bay, it is an interesting region, because even if it turns out that this copper system is a unique freak in this one area, all the exploration will probably come up with other interesting stuff. And even if you don't find something similar, you may find a shear controlled gold system or something similar to Eleanor in this other area. So I'm excited, because this type of magnet for exploration dollars, with the whole sort of Quebec institutions and pension funds and the government very supportive of it, this could pull in focused money into an area, get an old-fashioned, exciting area play going, and allow us to ride out this very bad bear market that's now in its eighth year. And by the way, if we get a big general market meltdown, yeah, everything will sag briefly, but then the market will shrug it off and carry on. And if gold, you know, sinks down a bit, or even copper sinks down, the market again will ignore it. We need an area play like this with multiple participants, none of them, you know, necessarily there because they were super smart and had figured it out 5 years ago, but are accidentally in a place that's suddenly super hot.
All right, John, we're going to wrap it up there. A lot of information to digest, but especially a lot of information on that James Bay area play. It is, again, kind of just getting going. There's still a lot of work that needs to be done, but if there can be a big discovery made and more money raised in the area, who knows, maybe it will help drive the metals market and metal stocks higher. But right now, still, it is a slow sector, and everyone's just waiting either for a gold price breakout or for a true discovery to happen. John, great chatting with you. Thanks again for your time, and have a great rest of your day.
You're welcome, Corey.